Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.
And only on November 1st,
that's correct.
2018.
A beautiful November 1st.
It is, right?
Nice Southern California weather. I'll take that anytime, Michael.
We are blessed to be in a beautiful studio, and we have a beautiful view of the San Fernando Valley.
That's right.
And directly across the street from our studio is Notre Dame.
That's right.
The high school.
Oh, yeah. Heroes ready for a football game. Although they got
a great football team, too.
That's right. No
Absolutely.
Doubt about it. And I'll take the Southern California weather over the Indiana weather any day. So.
And the beautiful San Gabriel Mountains out there
That's
as well.
Right.
So.
Well, Michael, as you said, it is a beautiful first day of November here in Los Angeles.
And it certainly is. We have a fantastic show.
We do.
And a couple of gentlemen who have performed throughout the country and the globe, and they're here to tell us all about their current appearances right here in the Southland.
That they are, Michael.
So we are so happy to welcome our exceptionally talented guests, Nick Cavara and Gabriel Manro.
That's right. Great to see you guys. Hey, thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thank you.
Everybody get in, okay?
Thanks for having us. Yeah.
What kind of traffic on the Southern California freeways today?
You know, for me, it was unbelievably clear. It was very strange.
Cool. I'm so glad.
I came from the west side, and I flew in like 15 minutes, and I think I was further than Michael, and I think I beat him here.
Amazing. Well, I was wondering if it was trick-or-treater hangover, you know, where everybody was still out trying to get back together after their sugar highs from last night. Did you guys do anything fun last night?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Uh-oh.
Gabriel says, but it may not be suitable for radio.
No, I just stayed home and gave candy to the trick-or-treaters.
Nice.
Yeah, I
love
that's
looking
fun.
At the costumes.
Yeah.
Well, we are talking opera today. We're talking some great musical theater. We've got some plays we're going to talk about, some award ceremonies we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
Really good stuff. But, Michael, obviously, before we do that, we should go ahead and take a moment and thank our sponsors.
I think you're right. We'd like to thank, ladies and gentlemen, Princess Cruises for coming on board as presenting sponsor for State of the Arts during 2018, a pioneer in excellence on the high seas for meaningful travelers who are seeking experiences, enriching experiences. Only Princess Cruises offers cruise vacations to help you come back new, providing fresh perspectives by connecting you with nature, cultures, and loved ones in a new way.
One of the best-known names in cruising, Princess Cruises first set sail in 1965 with a single ship cruising to Mexico. Today, the line has grown to become the third largest cruise line in the world. Renowned for innovative ships, an array of onboard options including extravagant entertainment and an environment of exceptional customer service. A recognized leader in worldwide cruising, Princess carries approximately 1.7 million guests each year to more than 360 destinations worldwide, aboard a fleet of 17 modern vessels.
Experience the next wave in vacation travel. At the end of each month from September to August, one lucky winner will win a cruise for two in a balcony stateroom on board one of the new Ocean Medallion class ships. Make sure to enter every month for your chance to win, and you can do that by going to latalkradio.com, and you then find Channel 2, you find State of the Arts, you punch up our page, and you will see the Princess logo, and you click on that, and that takes you into the registration process. You can do it as many times as you like, and we really urge you to do this. This is a very extravagant gift.
That's right.
With a value of $5,000.
A great deal. And as always, Michael, of course, we'd like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts here in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to State of the Arts.
We are indeed. They're amazing. Mike Napoli and his team over there. Andrew, it's been a week, though, but since we've seen each other, so what was going on besides Halloween? And I do want to hear about it because you're little.
You want to know what I dressed up as, don't you?
I do.
You can't wait to hear.
I can't.
I was a tired daddy.
Oh, you were.
I told my kids I was either going as a very tired looking single man or a very young looking energetic grandpa. I walked them around. They came back with more candy. They got more full size candy bars. When I was a kid, every Halloween you maybe got one full size candy bar. They came back with like 20 full-size candy bars in these bags, and they only went to maybe 60 houses.
Well, you live in Malibu. What do you think?
They're yeah, but even in Malibu. So that was my thing. I felt like I felt like an old man.
It's more testament to your beautiful neighborhood.
Everybody's going to be trick-or-treating there next year. The thing I kept saying, I felt like my grandfather. I was like, you know, when I was a boy, you didn't have these full-size candy bars. You're lucky to get some candy corn. But then we sat down after trick-or-treating, and we watched The Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown. And it was they'd seen it before when they were young, but they'd forgotten it. So when Charlie Brown reaches into his basket and pulls his little bag and pulls out a rock, everybody's like, I got a candy bar. I got some candy corn. I got an apple covered in caramel. I got a rock. My little boy just starts rolling. He's on the floor laughing. So I think that still holds up after all
these
years.
What was your favorite candy as a kid?
Oh, that's a good question.
Because you just named mine.
Yeah. Oh, did I?
Yeah.
Which is?
Candy corn.
See, now that's interesting. That's a love or hate.
Really?
I know,
it's
hate it too. I'm in the hate category.
See, look at that.
You.
Wow.
Yep.
It was like
violent
like,
emotional reactions either way on candy corn. As there's a fight in the studio over the place of candy corn in the hierarchy of candy.
Now, we are talking about the same thing, right? It looks like a little a cone, a little wax cone.
Michael cannot imagine somebody
You've
not liking it.
You've identified it correctly.
And it has two colors. It's orange and yellow.
Well, and they also do the new ones that have the chocolate top, and then they've kind of varied it. There's ones that have different flavors in the candy corn. It's interesting.
Would that be acceptable, Gabriel?
He says no. He's against
great.
The entire theory of it.
It's just pure sugar.
Not that pure sugar is really bad, but
it's a little plain for my taste.
So what do you lean towards?
Definitely chocolate.
Very nice.
Snickers is my favorite. Yeah.
Wow.
The Snickers does not survive for the trick-or-treaters.
So you said you're engaged, yeah? You don't have any kids yet.
Don't have any kids yet.
So the big temptation is when you see your kid who loves the same candy that you do, is after they go to bed and you've got those 2 hours while you're supposed to be doing housework, do you steal one of those out of their bag? And thus far, I've resisted temptation. But with all the candy they came home with last night, I actually thought I would be doing them a service to swipe a little bit of it so they don't walk home with diabetes after all this. I mean, like, they were loaded up with candy. And I remember thinking, who thought this was a good idea?
The candy companies.
Candy companies.
Yes, exactly right. And as a kid, it never hit me just how absolutely gluttonous that holiday is. But as a father, you sure do see it. So,
did anybody else go in a costume this year?
I did not, but my dogs did.
I heard what they were.
Oh, tell me.
You
have
to listen.
I have two beagles, and one's a little girl, and one's a boy. Mm-hmm. I rescued them. I adopted them, and we've been together for about 5 years. And we've never done this before. But I live in one of these complexes that they're calling luxury living and urban living. You know, so it's right in the middle of Ventura Boulevard in the city of Encino, and it's kind of cool because you do step out. You know, from your place, and you're in the city of Encino and all of the buildings and the great restaurants you can walk to.
Oh, yeah.
And so we walk every day about three times. And I was reluctant I thought, is this corny of me to do this? Or but I love them so much, you know. And so I got her a bumblebee outfit. And she was a bumblebee with a bumblebee skirt. And he was a pirate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he had, the pirate scarf kind of that they wear on the head and with the skull and the eye patch.
Oh, perfect.
It was for as long as they could tolerate it.
Yeah, right.
And how long was that? How long did that last?
30 seconds.
Yeah.
Funny.
Yeah,
I would never be able to get a costume on my dog.
Yeah.
So he's our baby because we're never going to have kids. You got to be on the right... page with that, with my wife, and my wife's like, we're not having kids. And I was like, will you marry me? Absolutely.
Right, absolutely. I'm in on that.
Yeah, that's a good thing. But our dog is just, we love him to death, but he is just the biggest, I can't say it, you know. Yeah.
Would he do it even for a picture? Would he keep it on just long enough to get a picture?
Oh, no.
Wow.
Well, ironically, my dogs, which who are very, very overweight wiener dogs, win as skeletons. So it's the opposite of what they actually are.
How
but I always
funny.
Make fun of
that's
the, my female, Liesl. Here's her name. It's Rolf and Liesl from Sound of Music.
That's great.
Of course of course. A little musical theater reference. But I always joke that she looks like the horse from What's Opera Doc. Do you remember the cartoon?
I do,
The very, very overweight horse from What's Opera Doc. Bugs Bunny rides on this horse, and then Elmer Fudd sings from
of course.
The opera Tannhäuser.
He's got the horns on of course and everything.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Brunhilde, you are so wobbly.
Please tell me that's the voice that you're doing the project we're going to talk about today in.
What voice are you talking about?
I love it.
You mean
it.
How it's I golden. Sing?
This is going to be a fun show. We've got a fun hour ahead of us, don't we? Hey, Michael, before we move on, I'm dying to know, did you see any theater this week?
I did not, but I'm sure set up to see theater in the coming week.
Cool. What you got coming up?
She Loves Me, which is getting ready to open at the Actors Co-op
of
in
course.
Hollywood.
Yeah.
And also the Bronx Tale at the Pantages.
Bronx Tale looks amazing.
Yeah. And there's one other one that... is eluding me at the moment, but yeah, it's on like three shows, I think. Oh, something on Sunday at a nightclub, actually.
Wow.
And not my nightclub.
I was going to say, you're not going to tell us the nightclub? Is it a secret?
No. Oh, it's...
apparently, it's ladies Vigellos. And gentlemen, pay a dollar and Michael will tell you what club. Hey, well, you have a history with Vitello's. You were
I
there
do.
For a while, and of
I
course,
created
obviously,
created the nightclub for them.
Yeah,
there
yeah. Now, so. And then took it to the Federal, which has an amazing show
right.
coming up that we're going to talk about a little
right.
bit as well today.
Yeah.
So, lots of good stuff going on. And I had a rare opportunity this week. I was at the Broad, where they were doing the Carney Awards. These are the Character Actor Awards. It's really cool. It's Art Carney's sons who run it.
Well,
so it's really cool. But it was so strange because I'd never heard of it before. This is the fourth
one
year they've
done.
One
would think it might apply to a circus.
I thought the same thing. I thought, okay, so are they giving to the best fair operator ride? You know, the best Ferris wheel ride? You know, that kind of thing. But it's not. It's Character Actor Awards because Art Carney, of course, being such
so
a
great,
so great. Harrison Ford was a presenter. Emmett Walsh was an honoree, and they had, I mean, just really Joe Morgan, Patton Oswalt hosted it, and our good friend Donnie Most was one of the presenters as well. So,
really?
Yeah, some really great people. And the capstone of the evening was James Cromwell was a nominee and or was a recipient.
So great actor.
Yeah, and Joey Pants was there. And
Joey
Bruce
Pants.
Palatolano, I believe is his name. But he's a great character actor. He was actually there via video because he was on set. But Bruce Greenwood, a lot of really cool people. And the funny thing was that Patton Oswalt did this hilarious thing. And I told one of the writers from the Goldbergs that he did this, so I'm dying to get an answer. He comes out right before Harrison Ford, who's kind of their big surprise guest, comes out. And Patton goes, oh my goodness, I just did something so embarrassing off stage. And they're filming all this, so you heard a little ruckus off stage, maybe a dog bark or something weird going on back there. And Patton comes out, and he just flat out says, I did something so embarrassing off stage, I can't tell you now, but I'll tell you before the evening ends. And then moves on, and Harrison Ford comes out, and of course everybody gives him a standing ovation, and Emmett Walsh was there getting an award, and they gave him a big standing ovation. And then at the end of the night, Patton says, thank you so much for being here. They did a little talk back, and then he gets off stage. And I stood up, and I was sitting next to a number of people who all looked and said, what did he do off stage? Now, everybody wants to know. So there was hubbub all through the auditorium of what happened. So he either set up the greatest, you know, joke where now nobody's going to know and everybody's going to be talking about it, or he failed to tell us and somebody's going to track him down and find the answer. So, but it was a great night. They did performances. Donnie Most was very fun to listen to.
Did he sing?
He did. In fact, that was his whole thing. He did the through music for everything. They did an in memoriam of people who passed away, and they did, and he sang...
Say that word again.
In memoriam?
I think it's memoriam.
Memoriam.
I love it when you.
My brain
that.
Is. Well, I was going to say in memorandum, which would have been totally wrong.
Yes,
I love
that.
How do you always throw me under the bus on every mistake? I'm going to
know. Everybody has a blind
mistake,
spot. It's
right?
Okay. You know,
well,
we say things.
What's funny is I'm still dealing with my sugar high, too. So, memoriam. Yes, you're absolutely right. And it was funny because he sang one of the Frank Sinatra songs to that, and he just kind of sat in front and looked up at the screen. It was a really nice moment. They did a really good job of just kind of presenting the people who had passed away, and you know, it wasn't so hoity-toity that you felt like you had to be silent. It was just a nice moment. So he sang throughout the slideshow. It was a really fun moment. The whole evening was very good.
Did Art Carney's sons look like their dad?
You know, it's funny. Brian, I believe, is his name. He was there, and they don't look specifically like him, but they have his mannerisms. So, for instance, Brian at one point kind of did did that thing where he stretched his arm out to get rid of the sleeve that was hanging down, and that was kind of interesting to see. So, of course, a number of the people who were there, you know, you would know, like the Katz brothers were the ones who produced it, David Katz, and they had it was just generally speaking a really fun night. But the moment that really caught me the most was kind of when they sat there and they talked about it and they let the slides run of the people who had passed, and it was just a nice calm moment for all these people who you've seen in so many movies but never actually, you know, stopped to realize their full body of work. So congrats to the 2018 Carney Awards.
Yeah, sounds fantastic.
Our friend Ed Hall did the voiceover for them.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Well, and he does the voiceover for our things.
He does. See, we have something in common with the Carney Awards.
You know who Ed Hall is? You would know him if you heard his voice, and you will hear his voice.
Okay.
He was the announcer for David Letterman.
And Jay Leno.
And Jay Leno.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Both of them.
Okay.
Yeah. And in fact, it's funny because, you know, I mean, when you sit there and you see, like, Brian Carney, who was presenting last night, he has such a love for his dad. You can tell that he has a great love for what he gave to Hollywood. And that kind of legacy, I think, is so important when we talk about, you know, what we pass on as performers.
Really such cool a cool thing. Theater. Yeah. Theater too.
See, in my Hollywood or my Halloween costume would have gone very well at the Carneys,
which was,
it sounds like, which was pinstripes, you know, your favorite mob boss.
You'd have nailed it.
So
that's right.
I had the hat and everything. So I should have just stepped over.
Right in. You would have been 1930s. They had actually Art Carney's, they had his hat up there under a spotlight. And afterwards, you could go take a picture with it, which was pretty fun, too. So,
oh, that's cool.
So I've already said memoriam incorrectly. Multiple times. I've got three more words that I'm pretty sure I'm going to mispronounce before the day's over. So if Michael misses one of them, we stop him and we say, hey, grammar police, this is your chance. One time.
We're just going to put up a hand.
One time I was telling you the story before. My lips went on vacation so bad that I had to walk to our tech, Ronan, and say, hey, yeah, I don't know what happened there in the middle of the show, but I stopped talking good. So 1 hour on the radio is about my limit. Hey, we should introduce these amazing gentlemen.
We should
bring them in and let everybody know who this is. And at the end of the show, we're going to mention some other cool things, so stay tuned with us.
Yep.
Ladies and gentlemen, for the past 25 years, our first guest has navigated the entertainment, marketing, and business industries. He has produced the award-winning off-Broadway musicals Fannie Hill and Richard Corey.
He also produced the Business Talk radio show, 2 Minutes with co-host Renee Fraser and Betsy.
What?
One.
That's right. Could you say that again, please? Please say that
again. Burke.
I paid them before the show.
Not to be confused with Bessie Burke.
That's right. Which aired on KFWB News Talk Radio 980 in L.A.
He has performed on Broadway in Grease, The Scarlet Pimpernel, and King David, and toured with West Side Story and Grease. He starred in the Disney film Lauren's Story and the independent feature A Hard Sale. Some television credits include appearances on Jack's Place. Aha, Jack's Place would be the sequel.
Yeah.
Right, that's
yeah.
the one they didn't make it as well.
Jackie's that was brother, late, that's right. late night on Showtime.
Oh, it's going to be one of those shows, I can tell. On Jack's Place and some daytime tops dramas, including One Life to Live, As the World Turns, Santa Barbara, and Guiding Light.
He's here today with us, however, to talk about his upcoming performance at Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal on November 18th. Nick Cavara, Growing Up Crazy and a Little Bit Italian. Please give a warm welcome to Nick Cavara.
Nick, I got to ask you, Growing Up Crazy and a Little Italian, those don't go together?
Actually, it does. The very first thing I say in the show, it's like, okay, so Familia is actually Italian for crazy.
Nice. Nice. I love it. That's great.
It's actually, it loosely translates to really loud people yelling at each other. With their hands, yeah.
Yeah. Very so, funny, I love yeah. it.
You know, Nick, this is a return to the stage for you, right?
Actually, yes, it is. Yeah. It really is.
Because we didn't even mention your other life, which is being a marketer and generating $160 million for your clients.
Yeah, I got to stop generating it for my clients and generating it for myself, I think.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, so...
It's the artist in you.
It really is. Yeah, I can't get away from it.
You learned long ago to make money for other
people. For other
people.
Yeah. But as a producer, too, I understand how hard it is to go out there and raise money for your projects. as a producer, you only produce the stuff that you love, or why would you be doing it? And it's a real challenge to find the things that you love, and then hopefully they're going to go well, but it's just such a long shot for so many of these things.
So true.
Yeah.
So true.
But I think I grew up in the 60s and the 70s. That's when I was a kid.
Gentlemen, we just had a performer admit his actual age on the show.
Can you believe it?
Well, he didn't say his age. He said if, 70s.
They can't actually see me, so when they see me, they're going to go, oh, that guy's 25.
Yeah. I love it.
Right?
Yeah, but you'd never believe
it. I normally lie up one decade. You know, I was growing up in the 90s.
We'll have to keep that big spotlight on you at all.
That's right, please. Yeah. Really, really. Can we get something softer, please? Just a little, wow. Wow. But I actually do show a bunch of different family shots, and I've got my, you know, my Bambino shot from When I'm One, which kind of launches the show. And it's about these like fat little cheeks and my grandma coming up to me and just ripping off my cheeks. She's like, como se bello. And I'm like, grandma, ow, Jesus. And she's like, you're so beautiful. I'm not like, not now with this big old bruise on my face.
I was beautiful.
Yeah. Thanks
I was beautiful
for that.
Before.
Yeah. So yeah, it's going to be quite a lot of fun, but I really do have a varied background. From, I was an 82nd Airborne Division paratrooper.
Yeah.
Went out of high school. I went in to be a paratrooper because I thought I wanted to go into the arts, but I decided
I'd
go jump out of
planes. Did you have to jump out of things that are high when you do that?
It was really weird because I jumped out of 32 planes and they all landed.
And you thought, what was I doing?
And I thought, I'm stopping this because if they land, what the hell am I
taking
doing?
The next one
jumping
away.
Right
That's
up.
That's ridiculous.
But that was back before, like now we're in so many conflicts. This was before I was in basic training when they went to Grenada. I did not go.
Yeah.
I was out of the service by the time they went to Panama. So I'm the luckiest paratrooper ever because I did not have to go to combat. So
well,
I
hey,
just,
either
just
way, we
huge
certainly do
that.
Appreciate the service and obviously the time you gave us. One more. I mean, it's interesting, your bit here on your production materials. I'm looking at this now, and you have, I assume yourself here, blowing out the candles on your cake.
Yep.
And is this Pops here?
That is
Pops. So Dad is helping blow out, and that haircut is the quintessential 1960s father haircut. So
yes, it is, especially for the Italians with the wave.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
Mad Men stepping out of there. What a cool thing. And this is a fun show because obviously they get to know you as a performer. What do you expect people to feel, or what do you want them to get out of the show when they leave?
Well, a big part of why I was doing it was because I had left the business and I had been pulled back about a year ago. After producing my shows, I was just like, my heart was so broken because I just wanted my shows to do so well. And they did okay, but they didn't do great. So I kind of walked away from it for a while. So I had an opportunity to work with, as a marketer, with an opera company. And I said, sure, I'd be happy.
You just made a new best friend.
Right.
Yeah, you're golden.
Like,
you guys really know how to program, huh?
Our opera audience is huge. I mean, it's hundreds of thousands of listeners.
Yeah. So in working with those guys, they're like, hey, we do this Broadway night. Do you want to do it? And my wife, of course, is a Broadway performer, too.
Oh, wow, okay.
And she's still in the business. So
can you give away her name here?
Stephanie Fredericks.
Okay. Well, she's
beautiful and so talented.
Great. Well, we're going to have to tag her in some of our social media stuff too. That's fantastic.
And I always tell people, don't let her know how below her station she married, because you know, if she finds out, it's just going to be it's going to be bad for me, because she is. I mean, she's the most beautiful, most talented, and most funny woman that I know. And you just usually don't get that lucky. I mean, I was just super, super fortunate. But yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. I came back to the business. I said, you know what, I'm going to just create my own show. Because that, I think, kids coming up today, they have to do it themselves.
Absolutely.
And you can't sit around waiting for somebody else. No one's getting discovered that I know of over on Vine and Hollywood Boulevard anymore. They're getting discovered on YouTube.
Yeah.
So it really is about what can you create on your own. And I thought, wow, I'd have this crazy dad. He was bipolar, and then part of it is that as well. So there was all kinds of crazy in our layers of lasagna.
He was diagnosed?
And it was interesting that his ups and downs. Some people who have bipolar, it's daily. They go up and then they're down a day. My dad, it was months. So he'd be up for like 6 or 7 months. And we thought, great, he's here, he's back. And then he'd be down for a year.
Yeah.
You know, so it was really kind of the struggles of dealing with that and wanting him to be. I think everybody wants their parents to be something that they're not.
Right.
You don't have any luck when you're a parent. Whatever you do, you're going to do it wrong. I mean, that's just the way that it goes. So it's really about me coming back and understanding that, you know, I lost my dad about 13 years ago, that he did the best that he could.
Yeah.
And I think he was He was a brilliant, brilliant man. He was a gynecologist and a psychologist.
Wow.
I mean, believe that. First bad dad
Don't
joke.
Don't go into the wrong office
right,
there, man.
Right? First bad dad joke. He's like, I always used to like to treat my patients on both ends. I'm like, oh, dad, me too. Oh, time's up.
Wow.
Right? But he really, I think even in spite of his disease or because of his disease, he was brilliant. Yeah. And even though he saw people, it was a whole beautiful mind kind of thing, and he had hallucinations. He still was able to achieve all that he did. I mean, it was an amazing thing for my dad.
That's
so
great.
It's really kind of a love letter to my dad.
That's
really
fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, as I look at Nick, Matthew Broderick comes to
mind. That has come up a few times.
And he was also married to a musical theater, well, Joseph Parker.
Yeah, right? Yep.
Absolutely. Who is Annie on Broadway.
Yes.
Very cool.
I wouldn't say she's extremely musical.
No.
Okay, I won't hashtag Sarah Jessica Parker today. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. She was a great, great Annie.
Michael's a little surly today. I'm liking it, man. He's got some spice to him. That traffic set you off.
Sugar.
I don't know. Was she in any other musicals after Annie?
She was.
Was there a musical version of Princess and the Pea?
Yes.
I think you're right.
Once Upon a Mattress.
Once Upon a Mattress. There you go.
Wow. Yeah, that's right. Well, that's great. I think that's obviously the love letter to your father is a compelling notion anyways, but also knowing his struggles and looking at them. There's that great quote that says, you know, when I was 17, I thought my father was an idiot. By the time I was 40 and had children of my own, I was amazed at how much that old man had learned.
Yep.
You know, and it's just the feeling of when you look in retrospect, you see how hard being a parent is and how you're going to make mistakes, but at the same time, pushing through it is such a valid and important thing to do.
Yeah.
Great.
Well, you know, Nick has a great team of people surrounding him in this venture, which is coming up at my supper club, Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal. And for those of you who don't know where that is, that's in the NoHo Arts area of North Hollywood. And it's Sunday, November 18th. And the tickets are very, very affordable. You come for doors at 5:30 for dinner and or drinks, and the show goes up at 7 for an hour.
And I would say, please, definitely drink.
Yeah.
You can count on me, brother. I got
Should
you
always
covered
include
there.
Include booze with the price of the ticket.
Yeah.
That is a winning combination.
Yeah,
I will say the Federal's got some great food and great drinks, so
yes,
there's no excuse not to, even if the show is as fantastic as I know it's going to be.
Vanilla martini we do.
Vanilla Manhattan, you're right.
Manhattan.
I love the vanilla Manhattan. It's one of the best drinks they do there. Also, the Bloody Mary's fantastic.
And also the great Gerald Sternbach, who's one of LA's most prominent musical directors, is your musical director.
Yes, he is.
Talented, and the beautiful Broadway gal herself and a wonderful, wonderful singer and comedian, as far as I'm concerned. Miss Heather Lee is directing the show.
Well, Heather and I, believe it or not, my first show out of college was up at the Sacramento Music Circus back when they still had the tent up there, right? And they called it the Sauna to the Stars.
Right.
You want to be up there in the summer up in Sacramento at 103 degrees.
Moved inside now, thank goodness.
Yeah, you're right. Finally, they made enough money. They finally have their own place. But we did a show. We did Into the Woods way back in 1990 when I came out of college, and I have been close friends with Heather ever since. I was Jack, she was Cinderella.
Oh, that's great.
And, you know, this was a perfect opportunity for us to get back together in the creative world. We also wrote a couple of screenplays together back in the 90s.
Wow.
And I've just known her forever, and she's just one of the sweetest ladies. And her mom,
Peggy Forrest,
over at the theater.
Hotel. Yeah.
I've been doing their marketing for 10 years
now.
Yes,
you have.
Yeah.
Wow.
I didn't realize it had been that long.
Yeah.
You even did something for me indirectly.
Yep.
That I produced at that theater this year.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, Sterling's Upstairs is one of my favorite venues, obviously, not just because my good friend runs it, but also because it is truly one of the most pleasant places to sit and enjoy entertainment. Like, you get that cabaret feel, that New York true cabaret feel, but you also get to meet the performer in an intimate fashion, and the food's fantastic, and it's a nice night out where you can just sit and enjoy. So, obviously, highly recommend people go see this. What's the easiest way for them to get tickets again, Michael?
Brownpapertickets.com online, and if you would like to call to make it more convenient, perhaps, for you, simply call 800-838-3006. And the beauty part about the phone call is it's 24/7 with live, respectful, polite customer service representatives.
They don't get you on the phone personally, though, do they?
Who, me?
You. They don't have Michael Stern. They don't read.
I'm not any of those things.
You don't stay up 24 hours answering the phone. All of these people, though, you're right, at 1-800, I mean, at Brown Paper Tickets, they are fantastic.
They
and
are.
They really do care about the shows. They'll find them quick.
And the cool thing, too, is Brown Paper Tickets, for all the shows that they represent, they give a part of the service fee that is required by them for the buy to the from the buyer to charity.
Mm.
So that's very nice. They have a list of charities, and they choose one, and all of these charities get some money.
It's a great thing, and obviously they care so much about the arts over there, like our good people at Performing Arts Live, and of course Princess Cruises as well. So.
Operators are standing by.
That's right.
They are.
Get your tickets now, and again, the date of the show?
November 18th.
November 18th. So coming up here quick, 2 weeks,
yeah,
jump in there and get
weeks.
Your tickets ASAP. So fantastic. Michael, I think we should buzz past our live arts
I think we should, too, because we've been having
on.
Too much fun.
You know, this is a fun show today. We got some spooky stuff going on here, some crazy traffic and all kinds of stuff. But I think we got two great guests here. We should jump right on to our next exciting one at the top of page 7.
Yes.
As we move on. Our next guest is...
This is not New York page 6.
That's right.
This is not the gossip column.
Paul Harvey had never skipped a page, but we at State of the Arts, we're irreverent as it bites the dust. Our next guest is a two-time Grammy Award-winning baritone who Opera News described as gifted with a striking, sinister baritone that tears into Verdi's music with vengeance.
He made his professional operatic debut as third inmate in Jake Hedges' groundbreaking opera, Dead Man Walking, for Opera Pacific with Frederica, von Staed.
Von Stade.
Von Stade. Let me start that again.
See, that's number two.
Hey, I think I would have gone to town on that one, too, man. That's
Verdi. Verdi is the guy's name. Giuseppe Verdi.
You know, he's a pretty decent composer. He did a little bit of good work.
Yeah, he did some good things. Yes.
Shall I go on?
Yes.
As we digress again on this post-Halloween show.
He went on to perform the role of Inquisitor in Opera Pacific's Candide.
He appeared in numerous contemporary world premiere operas, including The Ghost of Versailles, see, now I'm from Kentucky, so I almost said Versailles there, too. Versailles, Kentucky?
Right.
Yeah, there's
good
a town
though.
Called Versailles, and they make you say Versailles, and after being in France and seeing Versailles, you come back and you're like, Versailles? I got to go to Versailles? Yeah, they won't know what you're talking about, so you got to be careful.
Right.
In Versailles, L.A. Philharmonics, Alice in Wonderland, L.A. Opera's The Fly, Opera Santa Barbara, Seance on a Wet Afternoon, and L.A. Opera's Il Postino. He also created the role of President Lincoln, Golden Gate Opera's world premiere Civil War epic, Lincoln and Booth.
Off-Broadway, he led the original cast of Center for Contemporary Opera's production of Oration. His extensive repertoire and performances have also included numerous European engagements on television. He appeared in the European premiere live telecast of William Mayer's A Death in the Family at the Hungarian National Theater and Opera Grand d'Avignon, which was voted audience favorite opera by Mezzo and TBS network viewers.
Equally at home in musical theater, he has performed numerous roles, including Curly in Oklahoma, Tony in The Most Happy Fella, Abner in Little Abner, and Schroeder in You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. Just to name a few, he was recently returned to the operatic stage after an extended run as Jafar in Walt Disney's company's Aladdin.
And he is here with us today, ladies and gentlemen, to talk about his storied career as well as his upcoming appearance as baritone soloist, star of four stars in the show, but mm-hmm. He is the baritone soloist with the Verdi Chorus in the choral culmination of their 35th season, Passion Opera, at First United Methodist Church in Santa Monica for two concert performances on November 10th and the 11th. Please welcome the one and only Gabriel Manro.
That's right. Wow. So now, here's the question. We don't have a whole lot of opera guys on.
Yeah.
You have performed with some of truly the biggest names in opera. I mean, like, massive people. What's it like to watch that performance that so many people are, and still have to do your job? Do you ever get caught just kind of watching going, oh my goodness?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Actually, I feel a little bit robbed because I don't really get to see the performance. You know, I don't see what the audience sees. And it's really fun for me to go attend operas.
Well, so some of the people you perform with, can you give some of those names?
Well, yeah. I mean, we just finished LA Opera's production of Don Carlo at LA Opera, and Placido Domingo played the role of Rodrigo.
Right.
And, yeah, I mean, you know, I was right there.
And
right
you're
there
just going,
Mr. Domingo.
That's right, Mr. Domingo.
Yeah. He's basically, you know, our boss at LA Opera. So.
Right, yeah.
So,
is he also a great mentor, I understand, right?
He is the greatest.
Yeah.
Just the greatest. I mean, you know, he's just a great leader in general. And he's led many opera companies, but he's been at LA Opera the longest. And it's from the top down, because he is who he is. And he's just filled with love, you know? And it really creates a whole culture at LA Opera, which is very different from a lot of opera companies.
Hmm.
You know how opera people can be a little stuffy and snobbish and clicky. You know, I mean, that's what
I think
that's why that's the impression people get of opera too, and that's why they're like, you know what, I think we'll just go see a musical theater piece because everybody's light and fun and funny, you know, and opera's stuffy. But actually, if you come see a performance at LA Opera, you just see how the family that's there, and also how much everybody loves and is into the characters and this and that. And interestingly enough, I'm actually singing the role that Domingo played at this concert. Oh, an excerpt.
Uh-huh.
So at the concert, we're doing a bunch of excerpts from different operas, the highlights of operas, right? And one of the operas we're doing is Don Carlo, and one of the great duets and from Don Carlo, we'll be doing, and I'll be singing the same part that Domingo just sung at LA Opera.
Isn't there opera has changed in the sense of the performers who are participating in that art.
Yeah.
And don't they, young men like you who are good looking and not typical of what people think opera stars look like, men or women. They think they're very robust and a whole different kind of image, you know, from years ago.
Sure.
And I know that there's a term called Barrett, well, you're a baritone.
Yeah, I'm a baritone.
So it's almost add the word hunk at the end.
Baritone. Oh, the barahunk, yes. There's a website.
That's a term?
Yes.
Yeah, barahunk? Oh, my goodness.
Absolutely, the
wow.
Barahunk. Well, and I'll tell you why. In fact, I just kind of did a little... I just had an interview for Broadway World, and I talked about this, about how different physical characteristics often are go with the voice, just naturally. Like, people who are born barahunky tend to have lower voices, and tenors generally are a little shorter and a little bit more round.
Great, now
maybe.
I have to walk around talking like this all day.
I'm thinking Nick might be a tenor, maybe, possibly.
I used to be a tenor, and now, you know, when I wake up, it's very baritone.
Yeah, yeah, okay, yeah.
But a friend of mine,
and the voice does get, it tends to get lower.
That's
as you get
funny.
Older. Yeah, yeah.
A friend of mine who was a tenor, and he was just obnoxious, and I loved him, and he would always say, well, there's the bass register and the baritone register, but there's the cash register.
The cash register. That is true. Traditionally, the higher fees go to the tenor.
Wow.
Because it's a rarer voice.
Really?
Yeah. But the rarest voice is the bass voice.
Mm. Wow.
And I really look like more like a bass than a baritone. Very tall.
Yes.
Very chiseled. Very lean.
How tall are you?
I'm 6'5".
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so people, I'm a dead ringer for a bass. So they think, oh, you must be a bass. And I tend to sing, you know... Opera has all these categories, you know. But I tend to sing a lot of bass baritone roles.
Interesting.
I just did a role in Vegas that's always bass baritone. In fact, several of the excerpts that we're doing on this concert are also for bass baritone. But I'm also singing baritone. So, you'll hear quite a wide range. I think I'm singing probably more than a 2-octave range in this concert.
Do you enjoy singing musical theater as much as you do opera? Or
Oh, yeah. You know, it's funny. I don't think of them as so different at all.
There's a huge crossover now, too, right? McNally wrote lyrics for both. And, I mean, there's multiple people who have, you know, made that crossover.
They're really, it has been for a long time.
Yeah.
In fact, there are operas that have won Tony Awards.
Yeah.
And since back in the 50s.
Right.
And they won, and I'm trying to think of the opera. I think it was Saint of Bleecker Street beat Peter Pan.
Wow.
As for the Drama Desk Circle Best Musical Awards.
Well, Phantom of the Opera kind of merged those two worlds in a way and kind of brought people from both sides who loved those stories so much as well, which I thought was interesting.
Right. In more modern times, absolutely.
Yeah.
The Les Miserables and Phantom of the Opera were much more operatic forms because they were serious pieces. They were through sung and they're very blush. You know, they're very Puccini-like, I guess you might want to call it.
Such a good bridge to bring those two worlds together.
Yeah.
My sister-in-law is an opera singer, and she certainly confounds those traditional ideas of what a soprano or an alto is like. She's very modern, and you know, she crosses over to musical theater very, very well with an amazing talent that whole family has, all amazing singers. But it's interesting, too, to hear points of view kind of from people who travel with different operas and what that takes to be an opera performer. You must have to take such amazing care of your voice for some of those things that you have to sing. I mean, the range, and not only the lyrics and the pronunciations and all those different things. Do you have a regime that you go through, or a regimen that you go through each morning to make sure your voice is what you need it to be?
Yes. And, you know, it tends to get more, it gets better and better as I get more and more honed as I get older. But and it tends to get more, less, you know, it's more... the regime isn't so big,
right?
But I think it just becomes part of my life. But it's funny because I eat a very specific.
Do you?
Very specific things.
What are some of those things?
Oh, you know, that's specific. I guess maybe I don't eat specific things.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, I don't drink milk.
Right.
And, I don't necessarily eat ice cream. You should ask my fiance. She would know all the things.
Your dietitian, apparently.
Yeah, all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I can't eat that. I have performance. I'm in performance mode right now.
As a sword fighter, I will frequently be careful with what my vitamin intake is because I can feel a difference in my grip if I'm undernourished when I go on to do a project. So I'll be very careful and make sure that I'm not overdoing it on carbs or something like that and get lethargic because I can feel a different grip on the sword, which is interesting because that didn't happen when I was 20. But now a few years on, it's become more and more important to me. And your instrument being such an important thing for opera.
Yeah. That's really, it really does. There's definitely an effect. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Halloween is not a great holiday. I mean, I ate tons of candy yesterday. And you know, and so now I'm thinking, okay, well, I have a performance in a little over a week. So I think I'll start.
You know, tapering off.
Yeah, tapering off. Yes, exactly. The reason it is because it's such a physical thing. It's like being a heavy weightlifter or an athlete. Because there is no big difference, and I don't know if everybody knows this, there's no microphone.
Right.
You actually are using your body to amplify the sound.
Yeah.
And I also say that really there's no difference in the technique of singing when I sing musical theater or when I sing opera, except for in musical theater, I'm not using my body to amplify the sound.
Wow.
And that's really, and you'll hear a huge difference
if
you go and listen to things I do. You'll hear a huge difference in the way I sound on musical theater and the way I sound in opera.
I will frequently be asked to not amplify my sound.
Yeah.
They'll say, could you sing a little softer? Maybe step back into the shower and turn the water up a little bit more, Drew. Thank you so much.
Well,
I prefer not to hear that today.
You're blessed. For in the opera world, you'd be. It's a commodity to have that, to have just the loudness.
Yeah, and but you probably have perfect pitch.
I can match pitch. Yeah,
I can.
Yeah.
I can sometimes hit a pitch. It's just not the one that they were intending. I'm lucky if I even get a pitch. Let alone it's usually five or six, kind of muddled together.
Wow, that's also a talent.
That's right.
So you can sing in harmony with yourself.
That's right. You gotta tell me how I can market that and make some money off of it someday. You're going to be my new business manager.
Yeah, okay, all right.
Well, you know, I asked the question originally.
I could be the counter singer.
You could.
I asked the question originally because a lot of opera singers can't make that transition.
That's true.
Over to musical theater.
Absolutely.
They just don't. It's not natural for them to do that.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
And when you hear them
hired
to do something in musical theater that doesn't require that kind of a voice, but yet they've hired perhaps the actor or, excuse me, the singer for who he or she is for marquee value or whatever, it is kind of disappointing, I think, to the audience. I've seen that kind of stuff happen.
Recently?
Not recently, but in
it feels
past.
Like it's gotten, people have paid more attention to that because it has gotten so much attention lately. People are paying more attention to opera and more attention to all the, you know,
well,
the,
I think it's because of what we're talking about with the younger set of
stars.
There's
a lot more, crossover. Yeah.
There's been a resurgence.
And not only that, but, you know, Phantom of the Opera and Les Miserables and all that, they're, you know, they're 25 years old?
Yeah.
Well,
you know,
or, even more than that now.
And so they're really, they're like the musicals that when I did Oklahoma in high school, you know, that's about the, you know, I don't know, I guess it was 30 years. That was 30 years old. But now that Phantom of the Opera and Les Miserables are 25 years old. So I think the crossover is because the opera, the musicals are now classics.
Possibly.
Yeah, I believe.
Yeah. Now, and I just wanted to also say that a great musical theater singer and a great opera singer, typically they're doing a very similar thing with their voice. Okay, and there really aren't that many great opera singers and there really aren't that many great musical theater singers. The great musical theater singers that are on those original cast albums, you don't necessarily hear, I don't think, it's in my opinion, I don't think you hear them always in the touring cast or something.
Oh, that's
like that.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know if you agree. I've really talked to anybody about that, but I was always disappointed as a kid, you know, because I loved all the original cast albums, and then I would go see the touring cast, and I was kind of disappointed. But I wonder if it's just because I was used to that. But I actually thought they're better singers. I think. Like Bernadette Peters is a singularly great singer.
That's true. She
can't
can
be
no
mad.
Wrong with me.
Right.
Speaking of Into the Woods,
Patti LuPone, who I've actually sung with before.
She was just live for a little while.
Yeah. And she's been in a couple LA Opera productions.
Mm. Oh yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
In fact, it's a winning combo. Both the albums. So that's where what the Grammys came from. Both albums from LA Opera that she sang on both won Grammys. So it was a winning combination for.
Wow.
For LA Opera, because I think it's that crossover. I think it was like, it wakes the world up. Like, look, Patti LuPone is singing on this opera.
Right.
One was Kurt Vile's The Death of the City of Mahagoni. I think that's what it was called. And because I didn't sing on that particular one. And then the other one was she was in Ghost of Versailles.
Wow.
Yeah. And honestly, I thought she was the best singer in the cast.
That's amazing.
But she wasn't singing operatically.
Mm.
She was just singing with just a very great vocal technique that she's such a great actor. You know?
Yes, and you said it right there, that line, that her vocal technique
You
know, bridges the gap between, I think, musical theater and opera, because, especially when she did Evita, I mean,
It's power.
Stunning.
It's a powerful, wonderfully produced vocal technique that can do both. That crosses over. Not that she sounds particularly operatic at all, but it just the voice is so expressive. You know, if the technique is really good, the voice becomes so expressive that then the person is also can very easily act through their voice.
You know, I had an evening with her.
Whoa! Breaking news here on State of the Arts, ladies and gentlemen. Michael's evening with Patti LuPone.
It was intimate.
Okay, that's two. You get one more, and then I'm going to demand you tell the story.
How intimate was it?
It was pre-planned.
Where was this at?
It wasn't pre-planned. It never is.
Yeah. It actually, Michael Feinstein, my pal Michael Feinstein, had a nightclub here at the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel.
Yeah.
Which was Feinstein's at the Roosevelt.
Yeah.
And he appeared there frequently, and other people such as Lorna Luft and Patti LuPone would appear there too. The person I was with was a singer by the name of Joan Ryan. We had gone to see Patti in that intimate 140-seat environment, and we were we were talking and drinking, and the show was over, and we kind of, you know, took our time to get out. And before we left the room, in walks Patti LuPone, because she'd gone upstairs, got her bags, and come downstairs to get to leave with her musical director. And she walked over to us and said, "Oh, hey, how are you? Who are you?" I'm Patti LuPone. And we sat there for 30 minutes.
How cool.
And just kind of shot
the
breeze with her.
That's awesome.
And she was had moved here because she was on a TV series at the time.
Yeah.
And she couldn't have been nicer. And I had, up until that point in time, I had not
Was it Working Girl? What's she on?
No, she was a mom. It was a whole family thing. I can't remember what it was. But it was interesting. It went on for a few seasons. But I had never heard anything good about her, you know, as far as her personality.
Oh, she's wonderful.
And I was so happy to know that that wasn't true, or it was just people that were maybe jealous of her. I don't know.
Well, the dates of the show, and this is obviously a great, great show, is November 10th through the 11th of 2018, and that's at the First United Methodist First United Methodist Church in Santa Monica. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So easy way to go get tickets. We want to be sure people get this here as we're on our way out, but price is $10 to $40, and the easiest way to get tickets is go ahead and call 800-838-3006.
Of course, we're talking about the Verdi Chorus in their fall 2018 concert, Passion Opera. And Drew just gave you all of that information. And boy, those tickets are priced wonderfully.
Yeah.
And go see it, because you won't have a chance. This the interesting thing about this Verdi Chorus is that it was founded in 1983 at the Verdi Restaurant in Santa Monica.
Wow.
And when the restaurant closed in 1991, the chorus continued, and it has gone since become a nonprofit organization under the direction of founding artistic director Anne-Marie Ketchum. So catch this performance.
That's right. Yes. Don't forget, Sterling's upstairs at the Federal. Obviously, this piece is going up on Sunday, November 18th, and a big thank you to both of you guys for coming to join
Absolutely.
Us today. Such a fun day.
Yes.
We had ourselves an epic, spooky post-Halloween show here today with a lot of energy and a lot of fun. You guys got to come back and see us again sometime, too.
I'd love to.
Happy
to.
Each Halloween.
That's right. Yes. We're going to book
it. It'll be an anniversary.
Hey, Michael. Live here?
I do live here. And, you know, my fiance would kill me if I didn't tell you what we went for as Halloween.
Okay.
She was Gene Wilder and I was Frankenstein's monster.
And
it was hilarious.
Did you sing Buttercup?
We sang Putting on the Ritz. I don't know the words to this song, but putting on the Ritz. Putting on the Ritz!
Hey, Michael, where do I see you next week?
Right here on the radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.